This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com and your host for the show that covers the annual event that is Liverpool beating Villa in injury time. It's pretty much an annual event now. Joining me to discuss this, Mr. Chris Budd. Welcome.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
It's fantastic.
Dial the positivity down a bit.
Let's get Phil Shaw on before we start bleeding out on the airwaves. Mr. Phil Shaw, welcome back.
Hello.
So how are you, Mr. Phil Shaw? How's Winter Soldier treating you?
Oh, it's not too bad. It's no WandaVision, but it's all right.
how's your fraction of a Disney share doing in, because that will tell you if people are receiving Winter Soldier well or not. Is it gone up or has it gone down?
It's steadily going up. I think it's the other things Disney have brought in. It's better than my Tesla shares and things like that.
Well, look at you.
Diversifying.
Yeah. Diversifying. How's your Tesla? How much have you got in Tesla?
Just the usual. $2.50.
I'll get you a Tesla. I might get you a screw.
I think Tesla shares are about, was it 630 around that, I think, dollars.
They're doing really well,
that.
Yeah.
Although they did drop a bit. But anyway, this isn't a financial podcast. Maybe we can do that at another date. How are you, Mr. Bud?
Not bad. Not bad.
How are your shares?
Doing all right, actually.
What have you got?
A bit of everything, mate.
Have you?
I've got a nice diverse portfolio, thank you, David. And on with the show.
Oh, he's a bit of a dark horse, this chap. He didn't like to give anything of his personal life to our loyal listeners. Screw you, bud. Screw you. Right. Have you seen any of the BAFTA winners before we go on?
Little bits and pieces.
Have you seen Nomadland?
I like Soul. That one... I haven't seen that, but I've seen Soul, which is brilliant. I think Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor won best score for that, which is well worth a watch and well worth a listen.
Have any of you freaks seen Promising Young Woman with Kerry Mulligan?
No.
It's a good film. It's worth watching.
I'll put it on the list.
Put it on the list. God damn it. Right, coming up in the show, we get into the latest Villa news from incoming financial results. They're not actually out at this point. A statement's been issued. I've virtually been to a fan consultation group meeting. So a little bit about that. Updates on Trezeguet. Then the 3 points were all kinds of things from social media boycotts. And prodigal son, 11-year-old prodigal son in Liberia, who is taking the football world by storm. Well, over there anyway. Before we get into the annual event where Liverpool managed to beat Villa in the injury time, before closing out the show with overrated and underrated, Mr. Milan Baros. Can he get to the heady heights of Zach Knight? It's going to be difficult, but we'll try. We'll try.
Does he have wax candles?
Every player should have them now, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, right, first into the Villa news. Trezeguet's done his ACL, which would mean he's out of the season and out for a considerable few months. Other players like Al Mohammadi and Mo Salah have kind of made remarks to him that this kind of thing that you say to people when they're out for a long time. Like Elmo said, "You'll come back stronger, bro. Wish you a speedy recovery." And Mo Salah said, "I wish you a speedy recovery and look forward to seeing you back on the field soon." These are the kind of things you don't say that if they're going to miss a few weeks, do you?
No, and it was one of those innocuous ones that they always tend to be the horrible ones, don't they? Be like Heaton's one,
yeah,
at Burnley, yeah, not good. Yeah. He's had a bad year, and you know, between his hamstring injury, then he got COVID. Now this,
yeah,
it's just a Villa injury. If somebody goes down, was holding their knee now, it's just you just know.
It wasn't the advertising boards that took him out. Like they seem to try to take out every Villa player in that game. There's definitely advertising boards have got something in for Villa. That's for sure.
It was the same advertising board that Gabby went arse over tit, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, no, there's a theme over the years there, for sure. I attended, at Villa fan consultation group meeting. I think the minutes, or the notes, shall I say, because they're not strictly the minutes, will hopefully come out this week by the time you probably listen to this. I think just the headlines I can probably say is if you've got EE and you go to Villa Park, there's a good chance you'll get a 4G, 5G signal because that's apparently been installed. Talks with O2 as well, so watch this space for that. So there's one improvement for Villa Park. Also, there's going to be over the summer accessibility seats for the disabled put in, and I think the away fans are now going to be put rather than being on the concourse and the Trinity. When I say concourse, I mean the kind of level mid lower. They'll be next to the away fans in the Doug Ellis, which will mean a drop of capacity to fit this in. So I think the capacity will drop a little bit, but I won't speculate how much at this moment. This is something that Villa had to do because going into next season, they would be breaking the Premier League rules. I think you get a grace period of a season or two to kind of sort it all out. So they've been below the actual quota. So this will get us back up to speed. I mean, this is something that Villa have been trailing behind a little bit. It's something you can fit when you build a new stand, but Villa, you know, they're kind of waiting for refurbishment and updating of a lot of Villa Park because it's you know, some of it's like from as one Villa staff member said, some of the concourses are out of a Hammer horror film. This is especially Doug Ellis. Financials statement came out. What it means is the accounts have been submitted to Companies House. They normally take a few days to actually publish them. So in the meantime, Villa put out the statement. I think the thing that's been clickbaited by the usual suspects, mentioning no names, is this sentence they put in about the long-term, stadium expansion and updating, which from meetings with Persley, these fan consultation group meetings, this is something that's asked every year. And the last two owners had plans drawn up and finalized to do this. But it's all down to, so this is like the third wave of these, but it's all down to performance on the pitch. And Perslow's been dead straight with this. He said any expansion is not going to happen anytime soon until there's consistency and progress on the pitch. There's no guarantees we'll improve again next season, but they'll want to see it with their own eyes. So it's going to be a couple more, you know, two, three more seasons at least, I think, before they even entertain the idea. But with these things, you've got to get the plans in place before you can start to do anything. So it's something you kind of do up front. You write these things into your statements just to, in a world of COVID where we've lost millions of pounds like every other Premier League football club, to add a bit of positivity in and just to suggest that the ship is sailing in the right direction.
I mean, they've already spent, haven't they, big on the new training, or was it the high performance centre they're calling it, that I think they're using now, even though it hasn't been formally opened. So in terms of, you know, they've already been outlaying on what, you know, would be classed as capital investment. I'm sure they'll be looking to do it, but they just won't be in a rush to. You know, we're not like the London clubs or Liverpool, Manchester, etc., where they've got, you know, 10,000, 20,000 plus waiting lists. I think Liverpool's about 30,000, 40,000 waiting list for a season ticket. So even like Celtic and Rangers have got that. This is the first time we've sold out every week.
Yeah, that's because they're guaranteed pretty much to finish, you know, in those kind of top six places, and they've had regular European football for you know, the last decade.
Yep.
We've been mincing around in the Championship for three seasons, and you know, we need to let's say, get firmer feet in this division before they start spending willy-nilly. I mean, there's, you know, some people have this kind of the logic that, oh, you know, COVID construction carried on, no fans there during lockdown, so why not build a stand during this lockdown? It's like, well, yeah, while the club's hemorrhaging, losing revenue from match day, from commercial, from TV rights, because there was a bit of a rebate there, and the uncertainty of what's happening next season. We may be starting the next season and it may be just be 10,000 or 20,000. So these are not the conditions where you think, oh, I know, I've got a good idea. Let's build a big 60,000, you know, 70,000 stadium. So yeah, it's a bit irresponsible because this happens every year. There's always stories about, yeah, North Stand being revamped, and you know, here we still are, and on social media all these old pictures of the stand being, you know, 60,000 80,000, you know, a lot of them, some of them are off my website that I did stories about like 8-9 years ago.
Well, you only need to look at Spurs. They'll be a good test case because it doesn't look like they're going to get Champions League football, and that big stadium is based on them being top four every season, so yeah, you need to keep an eye on their financials.
Oh, they've been hemorrhaging money. They've had government support, haven't they, to pay for it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they were also relying on that deal they did with the NFL as well, because they were going to host games there. And there were, you know, there was talk of a London-based, UK-based franchise, and that was going to be their home turf. So they've got a bit of a sticky wicket there to get over in the next couple of seasons. So, yeah, so just hold steam on all the clickbait about... wow, amazing. Oh my God, expansion, fantastic. Let's get it right on the field first. Right, moving on to the 3 points. First one seems to be a bit of a build-up here for a social media boycott, all based on what's been happening, I mean, pretty much daily in terms of racial abuse to footballers. Swansea have actually come offline with their social media. I think the Blues did as well, did they not? And Rangers?
Yeah, Rangers made a big point of it.
And now there's discussion, I think this is going to be in the Premier League meeting this week, which may have happened by the time you listen to this show, where they're discussing... because currently there's a strong consensus that a joint action is needed to put across a stronger message. So there may be a case that all the Premier League teams and EFL teams kick it out, schedule. And the FA are also thinking about getting involved, like a mass boycott in terms of football. You know, this was mentioned in the Villa FCG, not in terms of the boycott, but the racial hatred and how to tackle it and what the club are putting in place. It's, you know, it's the usual, you know, text this number if you see anything. But, you know, as I said in the meeting, the elephant in the room is you put out a post to celebrate Jewish Passover and suddenly there's like, you know, 26, 28,000 angry faces and loads of insults in Arabic, which... you know, it's kind of a historic thing. But, you know, when you go as a football fan to visit the club's social media, you don't want to see such a toxic environment kind of playing out. So what do you do? You know, similarly, when they changed the badge to rainbow colours, exactly the same things happened. And, I mean, it's easy to draw a line in the sand and polarise it. But the reality is it's not something you can solve, is it? Simply. But as I said to the club, you know, it's like you can do things like filter out terms and words is one thing you can do straight away. I mean, you'd have to look at it in terms of Arabic and then filter out such phrases, which, you know, it's you know, it's up to them to find out what is the prevalent phrase. And also, I think if they do lobby Facebook, if you're looking at practical things to do on Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, you can actually put posts out and actually not have comments on it. So that may be one thing, or maybe Facebook can have an option where you can put a post out and like go back to the old days where you can only have a thumbs up and that's it. That'll get rid of all the angry faces. So to have that ability to do an old school Facebook post would solve that problem in terms of the angry faces on like rainbow colored badges and, you know, things like Jewish Passover, etc. But, you know, it's up to them to lobby Facebook to do that because I don't think you're going to solve that problem, are you?
Not with a click of a fingers. No, it's not a quick fix. You know, you can
it's
make
a generational thing.
Yeah,
and we're talking to several generations. Mm-hmm. Talking about a generation, the Hillsborough Group, the official group that for around 32 years have fought the injustice. of what happened at Hillsborough have finally disbanded the police officers that changed statements. Is there three of them or is it two of them?
Yes, I think there's two police officers and one lawyer.
Yeah, two police officers and one lawyer. They have their cases. I think they start, I think it's the 19th.
Yeah.
So they go to court. So the Hillsborough group have, I think they've drawn a line under it. You know, it has been an obsession, rightly so, for 32 years. So they've decided to, time is to heal now that they've actually got some justice in the end. And, you know, that just shows that, you know, when you don't have to put up for anything, if there's some truth that you're fighting for, just fight to the end, which they did. And, you know, incredible that what you have to go through to get the truth. Right, point number three, and this, we're off to Africa. You may have seen this. It's footage on the internet of young Eric Marshall playing in it's Liberia's fourth division. 11-year-old Eric Marshall, who's about, 3'2", playing against grown men in the fourth division, which if you're 11-year-old playing in the English fourth tier, it's not something you'd really recommend, is it? Because most Premier League teams are scared to send their under 23 players out on loan to League Two teams here.
No, the footage is, it's brilliant to watch. I mean, he gives Teddy Rowe a run for his money, and just then you take a double take at him, and then.
Teddy Rowe is, just for listeners who aren't familiar, he played as a fullback against Liverpool in the FA Cup. Sorry, carry on.
If you see the footage, I think it's a few seconds in. One of the tough tackling midfielder on the other side goes in about head height at Eric Marshall. just let him know you're there. It's one of those tackles.
Because they give him the ball. Like when they get a free kick, they let him take it. And he does a lot of sideways passing. He's a bit of a little crab, but he keeps it ticking along.
He could be the new George Weah coming from there.
But people tweeting his football club Garu, they're called, and people saying, "Oh, you should consider Scale. An 11-year-old should be playing 7 versus 7 max and working to solve bigger problems later. Playing men 11 versus 11 is not the best situation, in my opinion." And the club replied, "You are right. He should be playing 7 against 7. There is conventional and unconventional. Sometimes the latter is spontaneous, but it has enabled us to see what he could do in such unfavorable situation. He is nearly superhuman amongst his peers, though." So he's got no option. He's got to play with the men because he's just too dangerous with his superhuman power when he plays over 11 years.
I love it. That's great.
But didn't Barry Bannon do that for Villa? Wasn't he playing for us when he was 11-year-old in the Premier League? was that just because he was short, wasn't he? That was his
4 foot tall player. I just, oh God, you don't even start. Yeah.
There was a joke there, but you know, tough audience, these two. Moving on to the game, the reaction. Anfield, oh, it was prime for a double. We were talking about it in something for the weekend. And
it looked like it was on for a while.
Yeah, the problem was, and we knew this going into this game. As soon as you realised weeks ago that Liverpool hadn't won at home in the league, they'd lost the last six games, had they not?
Yep.
Hadn't won at home since December. They lost the last six games, and you think, then there's no way we're going to win this. It's just, you know, when you need to sort out some bad record, you just play Villa, and we will oblige.
It's in our DNA.
Let's start from the top. Selection, Trezeguet in.
Deservedly, I would have said.
Davis, didn't really expect that. I thought that would be too brave from Smith to do that, because he'd probably stick with the only formation he knows, really.
Yeah.
Sanson dropped out. Was I being harsh there?
No.
Sanson dropped out because he was injured. And first half, you got the impression that Liverpool could have finished us off and should have finished us off. I mean, we were reasonably well organised, but you're thinking, this isn't like vintage Liverpool. I can see why they've lost their last six games here. Obviously, they've just taken a beating by Madrid as well. So it's not, you could tell that this was a Liverpool team, let's say, with a cloud over their heads.
Yeah, they had a bit of a soft underbelly, and they just didn't. And it was all very pretty, and Liverpool always passed the ball around well, but they didn't quite have that intensity and the sort of detail that they'd normally have. Where you think when you put them into those, you know, those sort of final third positions, they're normally really clinical, and they just weren't. They were wasteful, and then Villa, completely against the runaway, went up the other end and took their one chance.
Yeah,
with yet another goalkeeping howler.
Yep, and you know, as the theme of not having shots on target has been a pretty big theme over the last few games, this is what happens. You get a shot on target, always a chance at the keeper, because it was straight at Alisson, Watkins' shot, and it squirmed under, and we were thinking, oh, the double's on, and then suddenly Liverpool equalise within a couple of minutes, and we're like, ah, oh, shit.
Enter VAR.
We're like, oh, shit, oh, whatever. And then like 3 minutes later, VAR comes to, it wasn't like immediate, was it?
Oh, they were just, it was just bizarre. I mean, VAR has not had a good weekend, so we won't go into it because you could do a podcast on that alone. But
I put up a tweet saying, oh, the double could be on after we went 1-0 up, and I was getting a load of, oh, well done, oh, you've cursed us, you know, the kind of standard the usual response. Because there's two things you can do. You can make comments during the game or you just do none, and then you'll never be wrong. But, you know, where's the fun in that? And putting up the doubles on is fun because, you know, you're still not expecting to beat Liverpool. I replied to a couple of those people with QVAR or made some comments, and one, I think one of them hadn't actually realised that the goal had been chalked off. Because it happened so late after the goal. So it was like a real blessing, wasn't it? And we went in at halftime 1-0, and you're thinking, that might have triggered them. I mean, it's a perfect time for them to score straight after our goal just before halftime, and then that'll pump them up for the second half. So you're thinking, that's going to deflate them, because they'll just be thinking, oh, shit, our luck's really not in, is it? And we might have a chance here. I mean, the one thing that was worrying me at that stage was still some of our passing was, there was like blind, casual passes, speculative passes, and you're just thinking, this isn't playing the percentages, because we were given them the ball back too easily, and this has been a theme over the second half of the season, really. We just give it away too cheaply because it's just kind of a casual edge to our play.
Obviously, there was the Mings error as well. It was just an error-strewn first half, and I just thought...
Lack of focus.
Yeah, and you thought, well, we've gone in 1-0 down here. Liverpool must be
1-0 up,
cussing their luck, because we can't be any worse.
Yeah, and you just look at Traore as well. I mean, has nobody had a word with him about the crossfield first-time pass straight from a throw-in? I mean, it never works. I mean, it's put us into trouble nearly every time he's tried it. So, I mean, it's a simple word.
It's champagne football you play when you're 7-2 up against a Liverpool team, for example.
To give shouts out, I thought I was quite impressed with Nakamba, because when he was getting the ball, he was actually turning and playing positive passes, and, like, you know, let's say ambitious passes, but with purpose, that were actually, he was getting them off, because normally his role is, you know, if you get the ball, just lay it off to somebody, just, you know, play it easy. But he was actually playing forward rather than sideways or backwards.
And it was nice to see McGinn getting involved. You know, obviously he got the assist for the goal, and nice to see him involved further up the field.
Yeah, so we're actually in a position, you think, well, if Liverpool, that might have taken the, you know, that VAR decision might have taken knocked the stuffing out of them, and we can't get much worse. So we're a bit more focused, and, you know, we've shown if there's one thing we can still do, and that's let's keep it tight at the back. Mings has already had his brain, you know, his brain fart a game is already happened in the first half. So hopefully we'll be focused, and the double may be on, and you're thinking, is it, you know, is it in the stars? Because that VAR decision was like, I think this could be us. Second half, it was a bit more even than I expected, actually. But then it got to that stage where I think Smith is thinking, well, we can win this. And we started to think about, well, what are we going to do? You know, I was thinking, well, let's get Traore off. And you got two choices, I think, to try to win this game. And that's either bring Davis on or Barkley on, and just hope that Barkley uses this game against, you know, he's an Evertonian, so he's hopefully that will spark him into life. Or Davis will occupy their back line and, you know, give our defence a bit of a breather. But he didn't do that.
No, he did not. And it was weird because Liverpool, you know, Salah got the equaliser, and actually Villa improved from then on. You thought, actually, we looked pretty good. You know, I think Trezeguet hit the post, and you thought, we're actually in here. We're not, you know, we're not going to be all over them. But who is at Anfield? But we've got enough here on the break that you thought we're going to get opportunities here. And we had, there was the Trezeguet one, wasn't there? There was the McGinn one, and then obviously later on there was the big Barkley chance, and we fluffed our lines.
I mean, you're skipping over that Trezeguet one. I thought it was a sweet attempt with the outside of his foot.
It's a great, it was like a flicked finish, wasn't it? It was really unlucky.
Probably deserved a goal, actually.
It did. Yeah, I would say so.
He's missed some howlers previously over the season. This one actually deserves some justice.
Yeah, but you always felt Liverpool were going to score. It was kind of inevitable when Salah kind of got, you know, Martinez makes a great save and it bounces straight out to me. Think, you know, that it's those little breaks of the ball that you just thought they're going to get one eventually. They've had a few things go against them, and when they got level, you thought, ah, this could... I never thought the floodgates was open, but you thought Liverpool are going to really get a head of steam here. And actually,
but they
didn't,
that
much.
It became reasonably even, Stevens. And
on that 60 minute
mark that I mentioned, when I was thinking, yeah, get Traore off. But the first sub he made, he took Nakamba off, which I thought, well, he's one of the players that's actually, you know, helping.
He was the one who gave us, he gave us the foothold in the game.
And he brought Barkley on for Nakamba. And I was thinking, well, you're taking out somebody in terms of defensively who, you know, we're suddenly weaker. I think if you take Troy off and bring either Davis on or Barkley, it doesn't really affect you in terms of backtracking. With Barkley, it's in terms of defensive duties, it's almost like for like. Davis, I think you're a bit more solid because you've got somebody bigger to defend set pieces. And also, as he showed against Fulham, he's, you know, he can be a bit tenacious in the midfield and win the ball back.
I know, and with those two Liverpool inexperienced centre-backs, it was just dying for somebody to run straight down the middle at them. I mean, that's how the first goal happened. It was just an attack straight down the middle. I mean, we didn't do it again.
Yeah.
Attack was the best form of defence against Liverpool. I think if you just retreat to your 18-yard line, you're just inviting world-class players onto you, whereas I think actually their back four, certainly the two centre-backs, as Phil said, and the two full-backs, as much as they are, well, have been world-class full-backs for the last few seasons, defensively, you just thought, go on, just turn them round. Get them facing their own goal. Like Alexander-Arnold, prime example, he's one of the best attacking right-backs in the world, but get him defending his own goal, and that's the reason Southgate's not picking him for England. Just run at him. Commit them, and we never committed them, and that was frustrating because they were there to be.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Got it.
Because that was the thing, actually, at 1-1. I mean, this sounds like the most obvious thing, but it was literally the best way of getting anything out of that game was to go after the second goal. It was as simple as that because you felt there was going to be one.
And I think if we'd have got it, I think it would have knocked the stuffing out of Liverpool because they'd have had that sort of deja vu of, oh God, it's happened again.
Yeah, I only think there would be one more goal. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I also got the feeling, I was like, ah, shit, if we had the same team that spanked them 7-2, like Grealish and also Barkley in form, I think we won this game.
Yeah, because I think the punch that those two players would give you on the breakaway, Liverpool would not be able to get a head of steam. And if they did, if they did throw caution to the wind, I think we'd have had enough punch on the break and you'd have had two guys who can thread balls through to Watkins. And then obviously, you know, towards the end of the game, Barkley got that big chance, didn't he, where he's through.
Yeah.
And you think, pull the trigger, fluffs it. And then, of course, they go up the other end and we know what happened.
Yeah, up until that part, I'm just thinking that Nakamba, Barkley was the wrong one. I would have brought Davis or Barkley on for Traore.
Yeah.
At that time, maybe I think Davis, just because of what I said about that defensive quality that he gives you, at least, you know, if you're backed up and you're defending corners and, you know, they like to put diagonal balls in, then at least you got a big man in there as well. And then, you know, later on, Al-Ghazi came on for Traore. And that, I mean, Al-Ghazi still, you'd want him to be an impact sub. If he's not consistent enough to start, then you want him to do something when he comes on, you know, with 22 minutes to go. But he did pretty much nada, didn't he?
Yeah, because I mean, the thing about El-Ghazi is we've seen now over the period since Christmas that you don't want El-Ghazi in your own half very much. So, I mean, if somebody's going to be left up front, I know Watkins can do it. I would probably prefer to drop Watkins into sort of a more defensive role and leave El-Ghazi up top when we're defending, because we've seen what's happened on a few occasions there. He just doesn't have that in him to clear the danger.
When Trezeguet goes off, that was a signal for me that Smith isn't going to roll the dice here, because that's the next chance you bring on Davis and just go, you know, just go for it. Let's go for it. But I think he couldn't bring on Davis because he'd taken off Nakamba. So he would have been a bit light in the middle there. Because what was the other option to cover Trezeguet? I mean, he brought on Ramsey. Ramsey was all right when he first came on. But, you know, we get to their goal and you can point the finger. I mean, I've looked at it on that on the Liverpool site when they did that old slow motion thing. And when he's about to shoot, you're thinking, there's no way this can go in.
It certainly shouldn't.
It's one player steps away from it. Is that Konsa taking a step one way or is that El Ghazi? I can't remember. But Mings is berating El Ghazi for not clearing it properly. You could argue that Ramsey should have been sharper in his first, let's say the first half a second. He doesn't sprint to the ball, does he? He doesn't close him down sharply. He just waits for him to shape to shoot before he starts to close him down.
It's all a bit passive, unfortunately. As I mean, I thought, yeah, you know, when it, I mean, because the first save from Martinez is a brilliant save.
Oh yeah, fantastic. Yeah,
they should score that chance. He had no right saving that from point blank range. Then when it comes out, and it, I think it loops up to El Ghazi, you think, right, you can either head it behind for a corner and you can regroup. You're going to fancy your chances against Liverpool from a corner because they're not a big side. Or just put your laces through it and put it anywhere other than where you have. You could even kick it out towards the touchline and he's not going to score from there, but he hits it to him straight on the edge of the penalty area. And then when it comes to him, to Alexander-Arnold, who has got a great delivery and a good shot at him, admittedly, you're wondering what on earth's the England right-back doing in the left-back position. I'm sure Southgate took note of that as well. And but when, as you said, when Ramsey goes to it, you think it doesn't matter what you do it. Even if you bring him down or whatever, you have to throw yourself at the ball. It's the night. This is a harsh lesson he'll learn because he hasn't showered himself in glory here. You have got to put your body on the line there. You've got to take one in the face or whatever. And the same as El Ghazi. And that's what Mings is moaning at, because him and Konsa, probably weekly for Villa, have been putting their body on the line. And he's thinking, you've got to take one for the team there, and you haven't.
Because Alexander-Arnold, he actually had so long... to line up that shot that it was obvious he was going to shoot. It's not as if he was going to, you know, fake it or whatever, because this was like dying minutes. So it was, in terms of Ramsey, he's got to get there. And if he doesn't get there, at least, you know, attempt to block.
There's only one place in that net where Alexander-Arnold can shoot, and that's the place where you need to put him off that. I mean, there's so many bodies there. There's just one gap that he found, and he only found it because he had the time to do it.
Yeah, but yeah, it's it's to the death you've got to be fighting, and you know, still the lead up to that goal again, it was like blind, casual, speculative passes, and Barkley, what was he doing? Barkley with swagger does something with that. At least get a shot away.
And giving the ball away and stupid. It's not a great goal, but, you know, it sums up Villa. But I mean, my sort of parting gift on this game will be, if you're going to go and play the champions, admittedly they're not playing like champions at the moment, or a team with that much quality in the side, get beaten by a real moment of quality. Now, Alexander-Arnold's finish is it's a good finish.
Well, it was.
But it's not. But you've gifted it to him. And for 90 minutes, I think Liverpool have not played particularly well, but they've outworked us. And like, if you're going to play against a class side, make them show their class, work harder than them. Don't get outworked by a better team. That's inexcusable for me. When you're on the run of form Villa on, you've got to fight your way out of trouble. Well, not trouble, you know, I mean, you've got to fight your way and grind your way out of this bad run of form. And they managed to do that against Fulham.
But Fulham are a lesser team.
Liverpool worked harder. And for me, and that doesn't wash with me.
Yeah, I mean, my headline was just how they gave away blind. It's not trying something clever. It was just blind and casual speculative passing, which you're going into injury time. The least, you know, you're going to get out of this is a fucking point. If you play it cagey, if you play it safe, you'll get a point. But this wasn't even constructive to do anything. It was just giving them another chance to have a go at us. It was just giving them the ball cheaply. It's like they should have to win the ball off us at that point in time of the game.
Yeah.
Yes, well, we've said it before, the Villa DNA, and the final stat that was put up at the weekend is Aston Villa have lost 22 Premier League games from that manner, and only Spurs have lost more in 23 in the Premier League's history.
Is this an injury time?
Yeah, an injury time winner, or winner against them. So while everybody goes around saying, oh, that's Spursy, if we do it again a couple of times, they're going to say, well, that's Villa.
Yeah, no, it is a trait. And, you know, I joked at the top of the show that this was an annual event, because this isn't, you know, it did happen Villa Park. Yeah, last season.
And Gerrard did it at Villa Park. Mm-hmm.
And it's happened down the years before as well.
So somebody's got to learn about this. That this should not happen again, because, you know, we're not mugs.
You mentioned it in previous games, and I have as well. And it's this I don't know what you'd call it, this sort of mental attitude, if you want to call it that, or a mentality thing of it's almost aimlessness that's come into our game.
Yeah.
With and without the ball. It's all a bit aimless. You think, where's that come from? Because Smith That's not in how he plays football. You saw that at Brentford. You saw it at Warsaw. You saw it most of the time at Villa. Smith is not a manager that demands his players to be aimless. Who does? Where's this come from?
Yeah, this was the thing I was a bit excited about, those that 9 minutes against Fulham, was those assists. There was purpose.
Crisp. Really
purpose,
crisp.
But purpose, yeah. Intent. Here, what I'm saying is these bloody casual, speculative, you know, punts up here and there, and all they were doing was giving the ball away. And it should be in the player's mind, well, if I'm going to do this, 75% chance I'm going to give the ball straight back to them. So don't fucking do it. Meanwhile, you know, we lose this game, and because that is throwing points away, and or a point away, shall I say, and you're getting people saying, you know, people complaining about this. You just got to look back 2 years ago and we were playing Rotherham. You know, we were in the Championship, so there's progress. It's like, what are we going to do next season? And when this give away goals and injury time in, you know, cheap manners, are we going to say, well, 3 years ago we were playing Rotherham? Is that how we stay positive? That's not how we progress. That's not how.
30 years ago we were winning European Cups.
That's not how we get a fucking new stands built, because we need to progress. And it's all right if we're not good enough, but we are good enough. And that Liverpool team have been, you know, last game, home game was against Fulham and they lost 1-0 to Fulham.
No, and finishing below Leeds this season with Arley and a season ahead start on them in the Premier League is not a good look.
The thing is, we got to a position where we were playing so well and the potential was there. And this is not us not being good enough. And you go, well, okay, next season we'll get better. It's like squandering things. It's throwing cheap points. It's getting beaten by the bottom of the table team when they're down to 10 men and they haven't, you know, shown any sign of life of putting a run of games together. Pretty much, you know, how many teams have beaten them? How many teams have they beaten?
It's just not maintaining standards. This isn't, you know, if you're going to lose games in a season, everyone accepts that. And you knew Villa would have a bit of a tail off at some point, but it's the manner of it. Don't gift things to, you know, most of these games we've lost, it isn't even like the opposition have played particularly well. West Ham. I thought West Ham were very good and a couple of other games, but generally we've been playing piss poor opposition and everyone in and around us in the table is equally clunky and inconsistent.
Anyway, so that's, we're going to have to put a line under that as another opportunity missed. And this wasn't getting beaten by a Liverpool team who just ran through us, you know, like they have done previously. This was a, even though we had, you know, missing players, this was a chance. But when you're getting into injury time and you're starting to give the ball back so cheaply, then that goes down as an opportunity missed. Oh, one more thing. Since we lost, I'll ask you a quick question. If you have to line up the match day squad against the wall and you've got to pick one of them to clean the whole 10 toilets, which player would it be?
Phil?
What? What, me? No, I'm not doing it. No,
Phil, yeah, Phil, you're cleaning the toilets.
Yeah. It's Barkley. Ross Barkley's cleaning the toilets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
With what part of his body?
With his bristle hair.
Yeah, his brittle pad head.
Chris Bird.
I'm going to have to teach the young lad a harsh lesson for not putting his body on the line. So I'm going Ramsey.
Oh. Actually, he can do the North Stand toilets.
Yeah, he's got to take one in the face or he's cleaning the box.
Right. Let's lift up the mood. Let's get into underrated or overrated. Right, we kind of have a loose theme of a player that played for Villa, but also played for the team that we've just played. So we'll go for Mr. Milan Baros. Remember him?
Pumped in there by Milner. Looked like handball from Ridgewell there. Barry in towards Baros. That looked like handball as well. He's given it. It's Bakker. It's Baros. It's four.
He was a Euros golden boot man. It's a miracle. How did he achieve that? 2004.
Was this one of those ones where you score a hat-trick against a rubbish team in the group phase and that takes you all the way through the tournament? It's one of them, isn't it? Yeah.
The winners were Greece, weren't they? They weren't setting the competition alight with goals.
No, they were winning 1-0 every week.
I think they scored one goal and won the whole tournament because the rest of the games were 0-0. Yeah. And they just won on penalties all the time. It was a good Czech team. I'm going to say Nedved just...
Yeah, they had Nedved, didn't they?
And Nedved set him up. But anyway, so why did we sign him?
Oh, Leary wanted to upgrade for Vassell, and I think he also wanted a partner for Juan Pablo Angel, didn't he? So he was trying to build a new strike force. Well, he wanted a Champions League winner from Liverpool.
Yeah, it was a bit of a sure thing.
What do you think of Baros in terms of what you saw of him as a Liverpool player. And did that Czech Republic, I mean, his record for the Czech Republic was pretty awesome, actually. It was like 41 goals in 93 games.
Yeah, I was happy Villa signed him. I mean, it looked to be as close to a sure thing as you could get. I mean, he was, while he might not have been like good enough for some Liverpool fans, I thought to myself, Villa weren't just at Liverpool's level, they were sort of slightly lower. So you're thinking to yourself, oh, he's easily good enough for Villa. So you're thinking to yourself, yeah, this is good. And the money wasn't extortionate at the time.
But did that match up to the reality of what happened in a Villa shirt? He was frustrating, if I can
he
use
was,
one
he
word.
He was frustrating.
Yeah.
Some people would say he was crap.
Maybe we needed to sign Nedved as well.
Yeah, that was the key to unlock the Barros.
He was kind of symptomatic of Villa at that time under O'Leary. You know, we'd had the great season before when Angel had been on fire and we just missed out on Champions League. But then it was just a really bland team and not very inventive.
We looked to Barros to give us a spark, though, didn't we?
It just didn't happen, and Angel had kind of peaked at Villa at that point as well. It was just a poor season. Although he did obviously score a couple of pretty important goals in the derby, didn't he? He scored two goals in that 3-1 win over Blues that sandwiched either side of Gary Cahill's spectacular overhead kick.
Because it was only that first season that he did anything. I mean, he scored 8 league goals, but he scored, I think, 4 goals in the cup, so 12 in a total of 30 appearances. So a 1 in 3 man's not bad as a striker, but he didn't feel like that because the next season he was kind of in and out and just scored one more league goal and that was it. He only played 17 games though in the Premier League.
He never set the world alight for Villa. It was simple as that.
I mean, we have a thing about strikers where we don't give them the service. With Barros, I don't know, is that, I mean, I just remember him missing a lot.
Kind of a bit of both, frankly. He was just an average player in an average team.
He ran about a lot.
God, we've had so many of them, haven't we?
Yeah.
It was almost like one of those players, and we've mentioned these before, where you buy him off, and in this case it was Liverpool. It's not as if it was vintage Liverpool, but under Julio, they were winning cups at least. They won the UEFA Cup, FA Cup, League Cup. But yeah, you expected more. I mean, we got rid of him. We essentially swapped him for John Carew. And I remember I was living in Paris at the time watching, I was at Paris Saint-Germain's ground before they got mainstream, watching them against Lyon. And that's when Lyon were a powerhouse. And I think Julio was the manager. And I always remember sitting next to, at the time, my girlfriend's, like one of her friends, boyfriends or whatever. And he was a big Lyon man. And that's why we were kind of there. And so I said, tell me about John Carew, because apparently we're swapping him for that piece of shit Barros. And he was saying, John Carew, thing about John Carew is you got to get him to play. Because he doesn't always want to play. He said, if you can get John Carew to play, you will be immortal. And I always thought, well, no, that sounds good. So if we can get him to play, we will be immortal. And then you start watching clips when he played for Valencia or whatever, destroying Roma. And you got it with him. And you're kind of exciting because what you were giving away on the other end, because, I mean, the reason why he was going to Leon Barros was because Julio was there and he had obviously had him at Liverpool. So he thought, oh, I can get a tune out of Barros. I don't know what O'Leary's been doing. So that was a no-brainer. And then the funniest story you can find about Barros, and it's an obvious one that people probably remember, and it happened in the year that he left Villa. He was breaking world records, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Speed records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speed records. In November 2007, this is shortly after he left Villa to play for Lyon, he was breaking speed records, but not on the pitch. It was off the pitch, driving, when in his black Ferrari, he was on a freeway where the speed limit was, this should we do it in miles per hour, the speed limit was 81 miles per hour. And he managed to more than double that with 168 miles per hour. And he was stopped by the French police between Lyon and Geneva. And the local authorities' radar said, I'm going to have to switch to kilometres here because I haven't got the local authorities' radar clocked him at 271 kilometres per hour, which was the fastest speed ever recorded in the region, surpassing the previous mark of 248, which is 154 miles per hour, set by a motorcyclist in 2000. As a result, Barros had both his car and license confiscated and had to return to Lyon in a taxi.
Taxi for Barros.
But yeah, taxi for Barras in more ways than one. But maybe he's got a little plaque on that road saying Milan Barras, world record, 2,071 kilometres per hour. Was he a dick?
Probably, yeah, I'm going to go with he was.
So me and Milan started up front together at the first game, and I was excited about it because he just won the European Cup with Liverpool. So I was excited about playing alongside him, but it just... Milan was a strange character. Yeah, he's a bit of a strange character. Just wasn't really bothered.
He ended up playing where he started off his career, actually, in Banik Ostrava. He went there, I think he was in and out of going back there. So he played for them until he was 38, after a couple of spells in Turkey. He didn't last long at Lyon. He only played he was there for one season, then went off to Portsmouth and then disappeared to Galatasaray, went back to the Czech to play for Banik Ostrava, then went back to Turkey. And it's almost like Banik Ostrava had him back every time he flunked out abroad. So he just went abroad, played for a few teams, made some money, went back there, then went back out. And that's how he carried on until the end of his career. But I think COVID put pay. He was going back to Turkey. He was going to Boruspar for I think last season, and he was aged 38, but obviously COVID kicked in, so it would have been that January window, I think, and that seems to have fallen through. What was the quote when he said, my head would like to go on, but my body has said stop? And at 38 he retired from football. But he's had his biography out in Czech Republic, but I don't think you can get it in English. It's not on Amazon, but that came out last year. Barros,
the man, the myth.
You're going to get an audiobook version of it in Czech.
We could have brought him.
That'll be quick, wouldn't it? It'll be over in about 30 seconds.
we could have brought him home last January instead. It would probably been a cheaper option than Samara.
Well, it would have been a novelty for sure. In the League Cup final, Barros comes on. One last throw of the dice to try to get us back in the game. Right, underrated or overrated?
Over.
Yeah, overrated.
Overrated.
If you come with that record, you have to do better.
What, the speed record that came after his time at Villa? But no, he's if you've got the golden boot in the Euros, we're expecting a little bit more, I'm afraid, Mr. Barros. Right, anyway, thank you very much for listening. Also, shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons. Thank you very much. Thank you, first of all, to Brian Sullivan for signing up, and also for Adam Sreta, I think is the name, for signing up annually. If you sign up annually, you get 15% off, which is around 2 months for free. You get access to extra podcasts and also our private little club on match days, Match Club, which actually is 24/7, isn't it, Match Club, essentially. It's worth joining just for Match Club. And go to the My Old Man Said website, myoldmansaid.com, and check out the menu option to click on the Patreon option to get further details there and join us. Anything else to add, gentlemen?
Absolutely not. Let's draw a line under this one again. Yeah.
Long time till the next game. Plenty of time for reflection. Manchester City. Problem is, Leeds just beat them with 10 men. So there's a potential for Manchester City to drop their intensity, but I thought Liverpool had dropped theirs. But hey-ho, hopefully we can get a couple of sparks to... before the end of the season, rather than just slipping off and fizzling out in some malaise.
Well, we're down in 11th now. It'd be great just to get a top half finish and then consider that progress and a good season, and then we move on. Because at the moment, the season, to be frank, is starting to grate on me, to be honest.
Yeah, it's. I think that has to be the aim, is you've got to finish in the top half, and that would pretty much mean finishing higher than Leeds, probably Arsenal as well. So that has to be the target, because if they just flunk off, then it's almost like you feel like you're starting again next season. It's almost like this season didn't happen, because you've cancelled out what you achieved in the first half.
You've undermined so much hard work.
Yeah. Right, anyway, let's not finish on a downer.
Oh, we've a great record in Wednesday nights, don't we?
Even better record against Manchester City. Sorry, we've been positive, aren't we? We're due one.
Right, okay, until our next attempt to claw ourselves back into the top half, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.